What's going on, guys? Today I want to do a little introduction for this video. I just interviewed Lolly of Lollipalooza, and you can check her out on her YouTube channel, Lollipalooza. She is a DIY crafts expert, and her channel features a bunch of tutorials on how to do DIY paper craft and design projects. She currently runs her own store off an Etsy page as well as a Pinterest page selling her crafts and designs online. And she recently went full-time with her brand, Lollipalooza. If you're someone that's interested in starting your own design or handmade crafts brand, and you want to sell those things online and develop your own community around your products, I highly suggest you watch this interview as Lolly gives a bunch of great tips on how she got started, where she was at in her life when she was getting started, and all the other things she had going on outside of her career as a DIY crafts expert. So without further ado, here is my interview with Lolly. Okay, we are recording. Today I have on Lollipalooza. She has a YouTube channel. She describes the channel as an exploration of anything crafty, but mostly paper crafts. Lolly used to be a close to my heart demonstrator way back when it was called Dozens of Terrific Stamps. And she resigned and began teaching stamp classes in her basement. At that point, she got away from card making and scrapbooking for several years until she came back and started her own YouTube channel in 2009, which she became highly active on in 2014, where she teaches everything she's learned about stamp collecting, stamping, scrapbooking, arts, and everything artsy and crafty. So, Lollipalooza, thank you for coming on today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Definitely. Yes. So normally I start off with just a question about what you're doing now, but since we were talking about it before the call, can we start off with what was your professional background prior to getting into teaching things in art and, right. and doing art, and how did that play into or give you the experiences you needed to do what you're doing now as an entrepreneur?
Well, as a child, I wanted to be an art teacher. I remember that. And I actually explored the idea of art school, but it was so expensive as to be prohibitive. I ended up going into nurses training. So I am an RN by profession. Mm-hmm. But a lot of teaching is involved in being an RN, patient teaching. And that morphed into me teaching, doing health screening, which is going to businesses and screening the health of their employees and then teaching them what they can do better. So there was a lot of teaching involved in what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And actually throughout there, I had many other experiences. I homeschooled my children and I became a bookkeeper and I became a tax preparer because I love numbers too, which is kind of a strange thing, math and art, you know,
yeah.
usually opposite sides of the spectrum. But anyway, a lot of teaching involved in everything throughout my journey. Everything that I've gotten into, you know, has all been about teaching. So.
Oh, wow. Okay. So, yeah, you've had a lot of experience outside of just the technical aspects of being a nurse.
Right.
And then with the teaching private companies, was that something you were doing? Is that through a hospital or is that through a private company that has RNs or former RNs working for them to go teach?
It's a private company that insurance companies would hire. So, for instance, if we have a company like Coors, for instance, Coors manufactures beer, their insurance company would hire us to come in and do the health evaluation of their employees.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. So with this one, you weren't doing any of the sales or marketing or bookkeeping for this?
No.
Okay.
That was all something separate.
Yeah.
Those phases in my life.
Yeah. So with the bookkeeping, is that was a side gig you did for other companies?
I did that for nonprofits for a while. Yeah. Just a few years.
Oh, okay.
And then I quit for a while and then I went in tax preparation. It's kind of similar, you know, but what I'm doing now is a lot easier than working with the IRS. It's a lot more fun too.
This is expanding rapidly. So you have an eclectic background. So tax preparation, how do you just get into that as a hobby? Like, how did that happen?
I was actually looking online for just part-time jobs that were available for my teenage daughters and say, hey, here's something you should apply for. And I saw the one for tax prep and I thought, oh, that's something that I would like to do.
What?
I didn't know. You don't get paid well enough to do that. It's
yeah.
worth it. No.
Wait, but this I feel like this is some of the origins of your entrepreneurial spirit here, because that's a lot of work. Most people would be like, I will never do this.
Always reinventing myself, I guess.
Yeah. Hustling since birth. So was this like a mail away course where they were like, we'll send you this certification, you teach yourself? How did you become someone where you can say, I'm qualified to do your taxes, you know, right, for X amount?
It was actually a local tax office, Jackson Hewitt. Okay. I don't know if you have them in your area.
I've heard of it.
Like H&R Block, Jackson Hewitt, there's several different offices, and they were hiring. So when they hire you, they have this course that you go through them. And it's like three books that are about this thick. And you go through them and you do a lot of mock-up taxes. And it you have to retrain every year because the tax laws change every year. So it's a lot of work.
That's intense. So have you always been were you a pretty good student, or were you at least into academics? Or?
Yes, I was. Yeah. I was on the honor society and, you know, got the really good grades.
Yeah. Okay, so you have some serious advantages then working on your side. Because if you're a good student, it sounds like you're one of the type of people that will work hard at any job. No employer is ever going to have to worry about you. So that's kind of interesting, because the idea that you would start your own business, it seems like you're already in a super ideal position to be an employee anywhere as well, which yeah. I've seen this with a lot of people. Some entrepreneurs I know are like the best executioners, and they could get a job anywhere and be fine. And then I also know a lot of entrepreneurs who are on the other side who are like completely unemployable.
Right.
So
you have to have the ability to come up with ideas, like in marketing, but you have to be able to execute. And you've been saying that, execute it, carry it through. You also have to have a little bit of business sense. You know, one of the things when you get an interview and the interviewer asks, what are some of your strong points? You know, and people have a hard time saying good things about themselves. One of my strong points is I go into a place, and after working there a very short time, I've already got a lot of ideas on how to improve the stream, improve the workflow, you know, get more done in the day. I just have that way of making things more compact, more concise, you know, flow better, make more sense. So, you know, I did that in the hospital too. They'd send me to another unit and say, these nurses in this unit can't get their job done, all their work done in 8 hours. Is it something they're doing? Is it the unit? What's the problem? And they would send me there and, you know, to evaluate that and see if there's anything they could do to improve, you know. And so this has really helped me in my craft business too. You know, if I do get inspired by someone else who has an hour-long tutorial, I can take that and break it down into 10, 15 minutes. And here's a very easy, fast approach to get this project done. The way I think, you know, make it easier.
That's interesting. So in another lifetime, you would have been like a management consultant or something.
Probably. Yes. That'll be my next makeover.
Nice. The Sheryl Sandberg of the crafts world. I like it. I like it. So, okay. So you've done all this stuff. Okay, we talked a little bit about your execution skills. And beforehand, we kind of got into an interesting conversation about this. You were saying that that's a huge problem when you're talking to other people that want to start their own businesses, and the way they're talking about it, the questions they're asking you. Could you talk about that a little bit and some of what you're sharing with me?
Right. Just like mostly about YouTube channels is just wanting them to specialize in what they're doing on their channel, especially for this. And it might be good for any entrepreneurial position that we're looking to do. We need to figure out what it is, what's our goal, you know, who our target audience is. So for me, I do get into all sorts of crafts. My main focus is paper crafts. That is my emphasis. But I have crafting ADD, and I do say, oh, look at that. That's a really cool thing. I want to try that, you know, but I always come back to paper. So that's my main focus. But still, overall, my channel is about crafts. We need to focus and specialize, because if I were to try and do, I'm also very interested in natural health awareness, but if I were to make my channel about crafting and natural health awareness, then I've got this dual focus. And YouTube does not recognize me as being an expert in either one of them. So if someone were to search online for a specific craft, I would not come up very high in the ranks, because I'm not an expert on that, because I'm all over the place. And then this video is about my vacation to France. And this video is about my dog. And then my 5 videos are about crafts. And then my next video is about health awareness. So if I'm all over the place and I'm not focusing on crafts, you know, it's like spreading myself too thin, like butter scraped over too much bread.
Yeah. Yeah. No, definitely not a good thing. So did you know this starting out? Like, did you, I guess, let the idea kind of simmer in your head? And once you started on YouTube, you knew exactly the direction, or is that something you figured out over time?
I knew that I personally only wanted to make craft videos, and YouTube has a whole series of videos supporting YouTube creators, and there are articles online, and I can't remember how I came across, but I came across an article once that talked about the algorithms and that if you don't specialize, that you could be lower in the ranks because of that focus. And I thought, well, that just kind of verified what I was thinking. But I saw it in writing. I just happened to stumble upon an article about it, and that it made a lot of sense.
Yeah, no, that definitely does. I definitely think at least having a one man focus is, yeah. is at least the one is important.
Diversify within that focus, but crafting is the whole umbrella under which I want to operate.
Yes. Yeah. And your channel has, so you have a few different channels that you operate on. We talked about this before the call. You have an Etsy store, you have a Pinterest page, Facebook page, a blog, a YouTube channel. Was that a strategy you had seen or read about and put into place using those channels together, or did that happen organically over time? How did you decide on those channels?
And Instagram, and I started Twitter, but I just backed off from that. No,
Instagram too.
I knew I wanted to start on YouTube, and I didn't have a page on Facebook for a long time. I didn't want one. I felt kind of embarrassed about setting up a page, frankly. But at the time, I thought it was okay to have a separate Facebook profile, and I didn't realize it's a violation of Facebook agreement. You can only have one profile, and it has to be your name.
Oh, okay.
So I had my Facebook profile for my family, and I had Lollipalooza Facebook profile. You can't do that. That's not my name. Palooza is not my name.
Yeah.
But so anyway, I ended up starting the page because I was forced into it. I didn't want to set it up because you have to say you're a public personality or
public figure. Yeah.
Public figure, and I thought, oh yeah, who do I think I am? You know.
You couldn't do it. You couldn't bring yourself to be a public figure page.
Yeah. So anyway, I was kind of forced into it, but So I had to let go of my other Facebook profile, and I have really built up a presence in that one associated with my YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. Oh, which reminds me, I think when you're across all of those different platforms, it's important to be consistent and have the same name and some of the same images or icons so people will associate it. I know people, you know, they want to have a YouTube channel, but they want their Instagram account has a different name, and their Facebook page has a different name, and their Etsy shop has a different name, and they don't know it's the same person. So I don't know that I purposefully started building those up. Instagram is the only account that I purposefully started putting into thinking it might be helpful, but I wouldn't say that I've been working at Instagram. I've just been sharing, you know what I mean? I'm not doing all the things that you should do to build your Instagram channel. It's just organic growth. I'm not doing all the business steps you could to build your Instagram.
Yeah, you're not trying to growth hack your Instagram account, yeah.
And plus it's hard to spread yourself that thin. My main focus is doing videos because I love teaching. And then I will just share those videos or share photos or share projects through the other methods. And I'm just now starting to work more on my blog, so.
Okay. Yeah, no, it is hard when you have a mentality of I have to put out specific type of tailored content versus I'm just going to share.
Right.
Because man, I don't think the actual time probably if you looked at it is much different, but the mental idea of having to put out crafted content on every channel.
Right.
Is intimidating.
Right. And then there's, you know, you need to have projects obviously that are worth viewing. So I think that's my main focus is I'm project oriented. I'm always thinking on the next project. And then from there, I think, oh, can I share here? Can I share there? I don't usually focus on, oh my goodness, it's been a week since I posted a picture on Instagram. I better get to it. I don't, you know, I started marking things on a calendar to see how consistent I was, you know, just circling the day. Did I post something here? I have not developed a system of posting like a video every Monday or a video. A lot of people will do that. And they say it's a good practice. I just haven't gotten into it. Mm-hmm. I'm very random.
It doesn't seem like it's hurting your business. So, so with your different activities you have in your business, what is an activity where you'll get anxious if too much time passes? Is it finding a new project and doing it and capturing that project, or what is your thing that you do feel like you have to be doing?
Right. I think getting some videos posted. I think the longest I may have gone maybe a week and a half without posting and uploading a new video, and that's a long time for me. So I do feel a little anxious about that. I have been on a design team before, and with a design team, it means that you are creating projects in a way of advertising for someone else. It could be someone who designs rubber stamps, and then if I create things with her rubber stamps, I would post those on. I'm her creator, whatever, her designer. And so I was on a design team, and so I would, you know, get like four videos made all at once, and I'd feel like I was very accomplished, but I kept forgetting that those videos are unlisted until the owner of the design team, until she releases them. So I would forget and think, oh, I really haven't uploaded any videos recently. Those ones are still in the queue waiting to go up. So yeah. Thought goes into the timing of things. I can put up a video and schedule it to come up at a certain time. Mm-hmm. And that helps. If I know I'm going to be gone for a whole week, I can put up a couple videos there. So it looks like I'm, you know, current and active.
Yeah. So you can preload the channel. So that getting the videos ready to publish is like that's the big, right. Big push.
And I'm putting more time into editing. Whereas in the beginning it was all just, I didn't know how, and I just had a camera and I had really bad lighting, but you start with what you have. Mm-hmm. I'm in an unfinished basement. I don't have the real expensive craft room or anything. I'm using what I have. And so throughout the months, I've been able to improve my lighting and a few things and learn editing here and there. But in the beginning, it was just, you know, film a video and put it online. So now that I'm editing, I can take a 60-minute video and bring it down to 14 or 15 minutes.
Oh, wow.
People more likely to watch the whole thing.
Yeah.
But that editing process can take me 2 hours. So I don't think people realize the time investment. So, you know, if I do a 1 hour project, there's all the planning that goes into it ahead of time. And I've already cut all the papers and prepped everything ahead of time. So there's many hours in advance. There's the hour filming and then the editing. And there's a lot going on besides that little project.
Yeah. Yeah. That definitely sounds like, yeah. 60-minute video to 14. Yeah. That's a lot of cutting, though.
It is.
That's definitely.
Well,
so,
if you're able to, like if I'm showing gluing something, I will speed that segment up 4 times its normal. Right. If they could still see what I'm doing, why do they sit there and watch me spreading glue slowly? They know how to glue. So, yeah. Or if it's something I showed in the beginning and then I have to repeat that 4 or 5 times, I will really speed it up, like sometimes 8 times. And that really helps to condense the video. So.
Oh yeah. So you're putting like a lot of thought into the quality of these.
Right. Hopefully.
customer service aspect of the videos. Cause yeah, no, that's true. That's much more useful for something like gluing is a good example. So I had a question about how you said you recently retired from being a nurse, correct?
Yes.
It sounds like you've always been doing side projects. You mentioned doing homeschooling when you had 4 kids. Yeah. Were you a nurse at that time too?
Yeah. Well, no, only during the first 2. Yeah. And then I retired. I semi-retired from nursing and then I went back into it. So it was kind of like, you know, while I was homeschooling, I wasn't working as an RN. I went back into it when the kids were, you know, out of school. So
yeah. Still not so much time. So this entrepreneurial thing, now that you're doing it full time, did you always know in the back of your head, I'm going to do my own thing someday? Or is it just the crafting business kind of took off for you?
Yeah, it just kind of took off. When I started my YouTube channel, you mentioned I've been on YouTube since 2009. That's when I just created or set up an account so that I can like and comment on people's videos. Mm-hmm. I was not making videos until I think November of 14. And I made my first video, and I thought that this is something I would love to do. I would love to make videos and show my projects like that. So I was excited, but I was thinking of it as a hobby, you know. And I thought, if I'm fortunate enough, I might get 500 subscribers. That would be really fun, you know. Yeah. And so when it started growing and I hit 2,000, that's when I started putting more thought, 2,000 subscribers, I'm sorry. Yeah. That's when I started putting more thought into what I was doing and being a little more purposeful. I didn't really see it as a business, so to speak. But I think, you know, when I hit 10,000 subscribers, which is good in the crafting community.
It's good in any community. 10,000 subscribers, great.
I started thinking, you know, this could be, a, you know, even a revenue stream, and I could put effort into this. The way I put it is I always tell my husband, now when you retire, I can take you out for breakfast, you know?
Yes. Anyway. Nice.
So that's kind of like, and then I was still working part-time on call doing health screening events. Mm-hmm. And those involved traveling out of town, hotel stays, a lot of driving, a lot of miles in the car, you know, car breakdowns, and it's just very physically demanding, stressful. And I thought, finally said, why am I doing this? I'm just going to quit and just focus more on doing the things like fixing. I had an issue with my Wix blog account. And so I just didn't have time to work on it. And so doing little things like that, fixing the error, getting that straightened out so that I could feel confident when I write a blog, or all those little business details that are in the background that I really wanted to do, and maybe some series of videos, that those are the things I thought I could work more on those instead of going out of town and working, you know, another state. The farthest I've ever driven was 6.5 hours for a health screening event to work Monday through Friday, though. And they pay mileage, which was good, but very stressful. It would take me a week to recover from that week of work.
Yeah.
Whereas I don't have to recover from doing craft video.
The craft stuff. No, yeah, if it's enjoyable or at least interesting.
Because it's very, crafting is a very good outlet, you know, being creative. So it's very encouraging. So it's fun.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it sounds like something you might do to relax anyway. So
yes, I would.
So at this point though, you know, you've gone full time. If someone's looking at your brand now, it could be a little intimidating. You have online store set up, selling your own craft products that you've made. You have all your tutorials, all these different channels. How did you get to that point? Were there any books you read? Was it just you watching YouTube videos and tutorials and reading blogs? Did you have a mentor like we talked about? How did you get to this point?
I don't think I had any specific mentor. It was a very gradual process to realize, you know, that I was coming to this point. And it's like, oh, you know, that's a really good idea. I really should change my photo or get it, you know, an icon or a, you know, whatever, my little emoji that I have for my icon. It's not an emoji, but my profile picture, so to speak. But in the beginning, what got me back into it was something called a smash book. I saw that, and it was just, it's a real haphazard way of just throwing photos and ephemera and memorabilia into an album quickly. And I thought, I want to do that. So I made one. That's when I started looking on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And the first channel I think I subscribed to was Corrine's Creation. Corrine, Corrine's Creations, because she was doing smash books. And I started watching her and looking for other people doing them. And so that evolved into making mini albums, into just paper crafts all over the place. And so I would say watching other, you know, YouTubers inspired me. And then being involved by commenting, I developed friendships. You know, if you want to build your channel, here's a little advice. You want to build your YouTube channel organically, get involved in people's lives, comment on their videos, ask questions, get to know them on Facebook. You know, do they have a Facebook page? You can interact with them. But to go to someone's YouTube video and say, hey, subscribe to me and I'll subscribe to you, that is not a way to grow your channel. Big turnoff. So yeah. I really would not advise doing that. So anyway, and then just little articles here and there, like I mentioned one that talked about keeping focused and, you know, specializing on your channel. But then also I read a book called The Handmade Entrepreneur, and it's mostly about selling on the Etsy shop. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of good information in there about your photos and information on Instagram and those kind of things helped. And then the author of that book has started a monthly e-magazine called The Handmade Seller. Mm-hmm. It's a really affordable, it's gorgeous. It comes, you can take on your iPad and it's interactive. So you can click on videos in the e-magazine. You can download files. And there's a lot of information about branding and building your business, what not to do, you know, don't watermark your photos, things like that. A lot of those that information has really helped me along too. But mostly as I've gotten involved, one of the ways to get involved, especially in crafting, is to join Facebook groups. That's when you get to share your projects, you get to know people. And I have made friends. I mean, these are not just casual acquaintances. These are friends that we pray for each other, we discuss problems, and we started because we were swapping crafts back and forth. I would make something for you and mail it to you. You'd make something for me, mail it to me. And so because of that, we developed these friendships, and they're very, very dear friends, and they inspire me constantly. And from that standpoint, they're kind of like mentors as well. You know, they share projects they've made. I get ideas from them. They get ideas from me. But it's a very interactive community. So I'm working right now on a project for my friends, too. I have it sitting aside. Right? Here's one I'm working on right now. I just making these book covers. These are little notebooks.
Oh, nice.
That I
That's awesome.
And stamped and painted in. And so it folds over to be a book cover. But
that's awesome.
So I'm making those for friends just because they're dear to me.
Oh, wow. So many questions. So
yeah.
Let me start with what sounds like the most important one. These friends that you made on Facebook. So how was this happening? Because this sounds like a tremendous source of motivation just for you to work, because you know you have all these people. Right. You know, that are excited about yourself, relying on you. That's huge. That's like hugely motivating. So how did you reach out to their pages, and were you commenting on their pages? How did that relationship develop? Like, where did it go from there? Were you emailing? Like, did you call them on the phone? How did this work? It's really interesting.
I have Skyped with a couple of them.
Awesome. Yeah.
And usually it's started from commenting on their videos consistently. Mm-hmm. Like, I know who comments on my videos consistently. Mm-hmm. I recognize those names. And so when I see them in a Facebook group later on, I can connect that name. Mm-hmm. Unless they have a Facebook or a YouTube channel name that doesn't correspond with their name. Mm-hmm. Which is another thing I recommend. If you're crafting channel on YouTube is Crafty Creations or something like that, and your name isn't in there, they need to have a way of identifying who you are. So at the beginning of every video, say, hi, this is Susan, and I am beautiful. So anyway, to recognize that that's who associating that person with that. But I would join the crafty groups. So that's when I really got to know these people, because you're commenting on each other's pictures consistently, and now and then someone would comment and say, I really love what you just made. And I'll say, hey, let me send it to you. You know, and just send them a surprise gift. People send me surprise gifts all the time. And you just start this chat going back and forth, and you discover you have more like interests than just crafting.
Yeah.
So a lot of friendships have developed. One of them, I just saw this gal, she made something, she posted a picture. I fell in love with it. And I said, oh my goodness, that is gorgeous. Is this available? Can I swap you? Can I make you one?
Yeah.
And swap. And that she's like one of my best friends online, started because I admired her artwork. So it just develops into conversation. But
that's awesome.
Another thing about communication though is I still at this point respond to every comment on my channel.
Yeah.
So that is time consuming when you have 16,000 followers, subscribers, because I comment on everyone. Well, if it's something that needs to be deleted, I won't comment on
that. No.
I do get bad, and I don't mean someone saying, I don't like your work. I will leave that up. Mm-hmm. I mean, I leave those up. I don't, you know, I mean, I don't edit those out or anything, but I, like, I recently had a comment or who was just being rude to another person. You know what I mean? So that's mm-hmm. not appropriate. She was insulted people of three different nationalities, and she was insulting. Yeah, it was really bad. So I finally had to just block her from the entire channel, that she can't comment anymore. But that's the only reason that I wouldn't respond to someone.
Yeah.
You know, if they don't, you know, they don't like what I'm doing, that's fine, you know.
Yeah, other than that though, that's a lot. That's definitely a lot of interaction. All the followers. And you mentioned two other things previously. You said the Handmade Seller. Is that now a subscription that you're a part of? You subscribe to that?
Right. Handmade Seller magazine. If you just even Google Handmade Seller, it's going to come up. And so it's a monthly, you know, you get an email link, and then you can download it to your iPad, or you can just watch it online, you know, or download it to your phone. It's got interactive, and you just swipe the pages, kind of like, you know, you would on a Kindle book in a way. And it's all color and interviews and a lot of business sense. I mean, I haven't read every single article. There have been a lot of very helpful things in there, though.
Yeah. No, definitely. And then the last thing was the commenting on YouTube. Is that the same as your Facebook pages? You're just commenting on other people in the art space you like, and that has developed into same thing?
Yeah, the Facebook groups, I comment and I interact, so I get to know people. My Facebook page, Facebook algorithms are different. And I did, excuse me, I'm going to scooch back. I did go to another training that I went to. Is called Creativation, the Association for Creative Industries, which used to be Art and Hobby Association, or something, Craft and Hobby Association. They have an annual event. This year it was in Phoenix. It's where all the vendors release their new products. They show you what's coming out. But they have a lot of business training. That was the first time I actually sat down and got a lot of business training. They talked about the Facebook algorithms. Helped me a lot. On my page on Facebook, that one is difficult. I pretty much have to respond to every comment. And I have to try to make sure I'm the last one to respond. So if I post something and someone comments, I have to reply. If she replies back, I have to reply again. I need to have the last word. Because under each Facebook page, it says this page is 80% responsive and usually responds in 2 days. So mine says right now I'm 100% responsive and I usually respond in 15 minutes, thanks to self-technology.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Eventually, it might get to where it's just hard, but I do respond to every comment that I see on my Facebook page. But that's harder than the YouTube, actually.
Oh, just because the volume's higher?
Well, no, because of having to reply to every reply again. You know, it's
okay.
And then if my response goes down to 90%, I think they didn't notify me of something. And I once spent an hour going through every post that I had made in the last month and every comment that had been made, making sure I replied. And I realized that is not worth my time to do that. So if my responsiveness rate drops, I'm sorry, but I tried.
I tried to keep it there. No, okay. That makes sense.
Keep it up, Molly.
That sounds like a huge part of your business then, just the working with other content creators and the interaction with your audience.
Yes, it is.
Very, very time consuming. And then that was Creativation, you said?
Huh?
Creativation was the conference?
Creativation, right. It's an annual event. If you join Association for Creative Industries, there's a fee, an annual fee. And you have to be a business, sort of, you know, a blogger, and you have to have an employee identification number, you know, through the federal government in order to join. But once you join, then you can go to Creativation for free and bring one person with you. And so I have a wonderful friend who designs for me. I create digital images that can be used in art. They can print them off and use them, or they can send them to digital cutting machines. Meaning, while we're talking, I'll show you something if I have one right here.
Okay.
So those things would be I sent them so many to people. Let's see if I have any left. Well, like this is really tiny. I hope it shows up. It's this little guy here.
Yeah, that shows up. Yeah.
Okay, and so like I designed this little panda face. And they can print it off and send it to their digital cutting machine, and it will cut it out perfectly for them.
Okay.
So the digital cutting machines have opened a whole new area for me to design digital files. And so they can send them to their cutting machines and cut out elaborate images. So my friend said she would be my designer on my design team. So I give her all these free digital files. She creates art and crafts with my files.
Okay.
So I brought her with me to Creativation. We had a blast, but good training, a lot of good classes.
That's awesome. And yeah. So is that the biggest part of your business now, selling? Because I see your creatives are for sale in your Etsy store. Is that the biggest part of the big business end of your brand, or what's the biggest business end?
As far as you mean income or?
Yeah, like what you sell the most of, I guess. It's either product,
what services. I sell the most would be digital designs. And that's mostly because I know I'm strange, but when I create something, I really enjoy it, like this. I made one of these and I showed a video sharing it, and someone sent me a private message saying, please sell this to me. So I did.
That's amazing.
But to mass produce these for sale.
Yeah.
It's very hard to recoup that kind of time investment.
Yeah.
And then you're always running to the post office to mail things. So my post office is not really close. So now and then I do make things and put them in my Etsy shop and sell them, but it's usually onesies and twosies. I don't usually mass produce something to sell. So I have some merchandise that you can make crafts out of that I sell, but mostly digital creations that I design. And that was a surprise to me. I had no design experience. I had no idea that I could do something like that. So that's been an interesting journey.
Wow. Yeah, that definitely is. And the digital designs too is very, very separate. How did you get into that? What sort of systems do you use for
digital? Well, the machine I bought is called a Silhouette Cameo, and that's the cutting machine. And so it cuts out, I really would like to show you something a little better. Okay. This is someone else's design. Oh, two designs that I put together, and I need to put a background on this. This is an example of what that could cut out. Can you see the detail?
Yeah, extremely detailed.
And so you could put paper or cardstock or even some other materials into this machine, and it just cuts it out and sends it back out to you. And I got one of those for cutting intricate designs. And with the software, you could make your own designs to cut out. And I thought, I'll play around with that. And so I just learned the system through trial and error, I guess.
Yeah.
And if I would get stuck, I would reach out, I would search on YouTube, see if someone had a tutorial on it. And also I have since in the crafting community found a friend named Michelle, who is the guru at working this software. And she has helped me out of a lot of scrapes I've gotten myself into.
Oh, wow. Wow. That's a learning curve, a whole new like system like that. That's awesome. That's pretty cool. So let me see. There's something else in the Pinterest or your Etsy store. So the small digital images, are you just building those in Photoshop or something, or how are you building?
It's actually in the software for the, it's part of the design software that comes with that. You can actually get the software without the machine.
Okay.
But you need, if you have the machine, you have to have the software to use it, but you can have the software with no machine. It just won't cut, you know, but you can hand cut. So it was that software. It's called Silhouette Design Studio.
Okay.
That's what I'm using, right?
I'll have to check that out.
People have said that I need to eventually get Adobe Photoshop for other reasons, but at this point I'm not willing to put forth that investment into it. Mm-hmm. I think it may be down in the future sometime.
Okay. Nice. That's interesting. I'll have to check that one out too. Well, I just have a couple more questions. I don't want to take up your whole day here. The main one is just, you know, for anyone that wants to get started with a side project, you know, you started a side project, now it's your business. Mm-hmm. What would you recommend to those people who are starting out in that position where they're just trying to do it on the side of their main job? Any tips or advice or resources you would recommend for them?
Well, if it was crafting, I would say definitely get into maybe the Hand Seller magazine, because that helps with business side, even if you're not thinking you're going to make money off of it. Talks a lot about photography and things, you know, that might help, you know, along the line. I would advise them to get a good social support group going too, because trying to do it on your own is really hard. You know, I have friends, we bounce ideas back and forth. And now that I have developed several friendships within the crafting community, I say, hey, if I were to do this on my channel, what would you think? You know, so I think those kind of someone who's not making YouTube videos is a good person to give me advice to. Mm-hmm. Because they're looking at it as a consumer and saying, I would not do that if I were you, or that's a really good idea. So whatever your market is, if it's not even YouTube, but, you know, is to talk to people who might be someone interested in your product, but not doing the same thing you are, so they could talk as a consumer and give you advice. That's been very helpful to me.
So having those two groups of people, the peers and then the potential consumer point of views, and talking to both.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's definitely.
And be yourself. That's really important. I know a lot of people put on a certain, they think this is what people would like to see in a YouTube video. So they try to put on the bells and whistles and, hey, everybody. You know, and it comes out sometimes like a little children's comedy hour, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
Be yourself. So I think it's hard to maintain that kind of, now I'm in my YouTube mode, instead of just being yourself.
Yeah.
And grow organically, you know, there are many, many business tips that people share on how to grow, especially on YouTube. And I think a lot of them are not, they're not long-term growth. They're kind of an artificial means of growth, like the one I mentioned of just commenting on someone's video and saying, I will subscribe to you if you subscribe to me. I don't think that's helpful. And another thing I would not recommend is joining a lot of Facebook groups and only posting pictures of what you did and your videos and never interacting with anyone else. They know that.
Yeah.
They know you don't care what they're posting. You're not interacting. You're just there to promote yourself.
Yeah.
And yeah, people, it's not an organic way of growing, and I don't think that successful. So some of those business tips you hear or read about, I think they're actually off-putting and they're not as actually successful because they're not people-oriented, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that goes along with the being genuine with your presentation style.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's hard to trick people over time. Over long periods of time, it gets harder.
There you go, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
I never hear about this person until she wants to promote herself, you know?
Yeah.
And there's an app. There's some kind of an app that if you post on your personal profile, it will automatically post that same post in every group you are in. And that it's really obvious when that happens, because like I have several groups that I have started and that I am admin of. And one of them, which may sound strange, is paper clip art. So it's actually decorating paper clips, which sounds very strange, but people use these in their planners all the time. And so if someone is always posting something about a totally different craft or about their Tupperware, that has nothing to do with my group. You know, I always keep my group focused on what the group's topic is. And so if someone is doing that kind of post where it's always this random, I know that they're using one of those apps that posts across. It's very, they're not even interacting. They probably don't even visit those groups. They're just doing this automatic post, and they probably read somewhere it's a great way to build your channel. And I don't think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another thing that I really advise against in Instagram, one of the ways people try to grow is they will follow an account so that the account will recognize them and follow them back. So I noticed my Instagram, I will grow by 10 and drop by 8.
I can't.
Hoping I will follow them back. And I don't do that because I want to follow people that I can actually interact with.
Yeah.
And I can't do that if I'm following 10,000 people.
Yes.
So I don't follow people just so they're aware that I exist and then unfollow them. And they're, so there's those that unfollow because you don't follow back, but there's also the ones that use follow bots. They follow and unfollow automatically through this generated system.
Yeah.
Like companies tend to do that, like a brand would follow people and then unfollow them a week later.
Yeah.
To make them aware that they exist. And it's one of those business practices that people advertise on how to grow your Instagram, but I don't agree with.
Yeah.
And there's it takes the person factor out of it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think, I mean, I think a lot of it is just people selling business information need to have something to sell. So, you know, I think a lot of the time they sell it all, like they get information with the bad, and then some of it doesn't get filtered out.
Right. You got to filter it out, right? Saying this worked for them. This is, you know, those, I tend to not watch those videos about how I grew my Instagram to 20,000 followers in 1 month kind of thing, because yeah. really using that kind of technique.
Yeah.
And they're not, are they real organic followers is the question. People who really followed you because they like what you're doing. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's definitely a huge difference. I'm sure there will be in terms of the audience too. If getting in as a business and they're unqualified people on your channel, I don't right. know how that would help you anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, my last question, this is what I like to end with is there anything I didn't talk about that I should have, or anything I didn't ask you that I should have?
Oh, that's a loaded question.
It is. You can go anywhere.
I would think maybe the question of if I were to start over again, what would I do differently?
Oh, man, that is a good question. I should have asked that.
Yeah, I would say overall, I've been very, very happy with the growth and my decisions and what I've done. I think what I would do differently probably would be to actually would have been to start my YouTube channel over instead of I had started a YouTube account in order to comment on people's videos. But when I realized I was going to do videos, I would have started a channel right then. So it wouldn't say I've been on YouTube since 2009, you know, videos since 2009. But anyway, and maybe not to worry so much and not pressure myself that I have to do this many videos or it's been so long, I have to do a video. And also, I would have set up playlists in the beginning. If you notice on YouTube, you can have the one channel and the one focus, but within your channel, you can have playlists dividing them up into topics. You know, because I have like faith art in one, and I have journals in another, and I have paperclip art in another. So all these playlists, they can go to exactly the one playlist that they want to see. And when I realized I should set up playlists, I already had several hundred videos and I had to go through every one and put them into their proper categories. I think one of my most successful playlists is thrift shopping. I go shopping at thrift stores and I find not old furniture or just good deals, but things that I can make craft-wise, I can use in craft projects. And then I remake them on video, and those are so that's my upcycling playlist, and people love that. So it's nice to be able to have it all in one playlist. I should have done that right from the get-go.
Yeah.
Instead of waiting until I had all these built up and I had to go through and create and move all those videos. But it took years to do all that.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds like a lot of work.
The other thing is to not fret. I think the first time you get your very first thumbs down, it's devastating, you know. I had 1,700 subscribers at the time, and I'd only had thumbs up all that time. So it was devastating, you know, and it really made me think. And I have what we call YouTube haters or trolls. Everyone gets them, especially once you've got about 1,000 subscribers. And that's my advice to everyone. Don't panic. You will get at least one. I think I have two, or it's one that has two accounts. But what they will do is they will go to your channel. They don't subscribe to you, but they will purposefully sit down, go to your channel, open a video, thumbs it down, and turn it off without even watching it. Open the next video, thumbs down, turn it off. Open the next video, thumbs down, turn. And they'll do that, you know, between 6 to 20 videos in one sitting. Thumbs down, thumbs down, thumbs down. Don't watch any of them, because you can see this in the analytics. The person doesn't even watch the videos. And so that's what we call a troll or a hater. You know, I'm sorry somebody is that miserable to spend their life that way, but.
Yeah, what would they be trolling you for? I feel like crafts is a sort of like neutral topic. What?
It's absolute. Well, there's a lot of competition, believe it or not, in the crafting community.
Oh, wow. That's dirty.
You stole my idea. Yeah. Or, you know, that kind of thing.
And whoa, that's crazy.
There's a lot of that competition. That's my other advice is people need to calm down and be a little more gracious, because, you know, like if I did this one where I put felt on a paperclip, that does not mean that I am the first one to ever come up with that idea.
Yeah.
I thought that would be a really cool thing to do, and I did it. And someone might come along and say, you stole my idea. And I'd say, well, saw your ID. I'm sorry, but I never saw it, you know. Yeah. But there can be that kind of pettiness. And I just really want to see more community building up and encouraging. I love seeing other channels become successful and, you know, but there can be some of that pettiness. One of my friends had someone say, "You stole my ID." And she said, "No, I did this in seventh grade."
Wow.
So, no, I didn't steal your idea.
Yeah.
So that kind of person, you know, might be someone to go through and do all the thumbs down. And it takes a lot of effort to do that. I can't imagine doing that. I'm not that unhappy of a person that I want to troll.
Yeah, that is. So don't worry about those people then. You're
don't
gonna
worry
get
about it at all, no. Yeah.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.